Perhaps we should go ahead, even though we don't have quorum. We're losing so much time.
Yes, why not? In fact, part of it is explanation anyway, and we may not have to take too many formal votes, it's true. We are therefore on delay adoption of the minutes of the last call until we do indeed reach a quorum. Now, what you should all have in front of you is either version 2, ideally, but version 1 would do, of the draft Names Council reply to the Committee on ICANN Evolution and Reform. If not, it may be awfully helpful if you try to print that off as we go through or look at it on screen. What I've done in that is answered the set of questions posed by the committee in their latest publication, by reference to the Names Council's existing 30 adopted recommendations. So what I'll do now is just walk through that paper, and we'll stop on those parts where there is some new wording, and ask for comments if that's appropriate. On the introduction there, I merely reference the fact that we've been debating since March 2002 on this, and give a message, I think, that Ken Stubbs had in particular emphasized on our last call, underlying one of our existing recommendations to do with funding and staff support. Any comments on the introduction before we go on to the next? Nope, splendid. Question one is scope and mission. And
Mr. Chair, would you like?
Go on, you're very welcome. Question one is scope and mission. Within the paper, the committee comes out as basically supporting the staff paper on mission. I'm saying in our paper, the board terms, the NC agrees, and then I'm quoting the wording of our existing recommendation one, where we specify what the mission is. So I presume that's okay, as there's not no change from where we already are. Question two, or section two, concerns board composition. And here, there is some new wording to look at based on our discussion on the last call. The first part of that is the committee proposes one voting board seat for the ICANN CEO. I'm saying here that the Names Council agrees to that. But on the second part of the committee recommendation, the committee proposes seven voting board seats for the chairs of the policy development and advisory bodies. This is advisory bodies recommendations. I'm saying the NC disagrees for four reasons. And here I list the reasons we came up with the call last time. Which is first accountability, and this is our existing recommendation. Second is to do with time. The chairman of a policy development body cannot perform effectively as both chair and a board member. The point I think was made by J. Scott Evans on our last call. Third point was inflexibility, and this I think was Bruce Tonkin's point, that linking board seats to the current set of advisory bodies was actually being an impediment to establishing future advisory bodies because they're somehow now building in more than you should do to forming a new body. And our fourth point related to government in our belief that government it's difficult for government in this way to try and find one spokesman for them because they typically speak for themselves. That's a point that Grant, I think, and others made on our last call. Is everyone happy with that summation of our discussion on previous call in reference to whether or not, and we're saying not, that the advisory body should have board seats?
No, but it's Miron. I just, a couple of things for clarification. I think we may be just a little too cryptic in a couple of places, and if you would insert the word national government speak for themselves, I think I'm not suggesting any change in the message.
Yep.
Secondly, do you feel that we captured in the accountability principle that advisory, people who are appointed to advisory positions should not be given voting board seats, or do you think that can be dealt with elsewhere?
We're making that point under what I call inflexibility.
In,
we're referring to advisory bodies, yeah.
No, but inflexibility merely says that you can't add, you couldn't add more advisory bodies. And I think the point is, I think, from the discussion that I was on and from the VC position, is that people who are appointed to advisory bodies do not have accountability necessarily to that advisory body, and they would then have an appointed position on the board, and a voting board seat seems not to be consistent with our goals.
Yes, Tony here, Philip. I wasn't on the last call, but I share the view that, that Marilyn puts forward, and I don't think that is in there currently.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a separate point. So that can, we can include that everybody's happy under accountability, and perhaps the wording advisory body appointees may not have accountability.
Do you feel that you're making it clear that we don't think that they, you mean advisory body appointees to the board, may not have accountability and therefore should not have a vote?
Well, this is actually, this the question here was to do with voting board seats, and we're disagreeing for that reason.
I don't think that really covers it, though, Philip, the proposed change.
I think you're being just a little bit too cryptic. You know what you mean, but you would be surprised what people will be unable to
read
into it.
I'm happy to have wording proposed. Advisory body appointees
may not have accountability and should not be given voting board seats.
Does it really cover the argument? I mean, the argument is that the board appoints members of advisory bodies. If an advisory body itself appoints by whatever mechanism the board members, that may be fine if you take advisory body in a very general way. So actually, I think it's the circularity of the thing you want to catch, and that's not in that wording, I think. Maybe board members should be elected by... should be accountable to their respective policy development or advisory bodies. Members of such bodies which are appointed by the board itself or by a nomination committee should not be eligible for voting board seats. I think that's the argument.
I think that's the argument, Thomas. This is Jay Scott, and I think that the if someone was appointed to this committee, let's say that someone in actuality was appointed, and those members of the committee decided that person should be a voting board member, I think that would be okay, because there would be accountability.
Right.
I think the process we're talking about is where the an appointed person is appointed to both serve on the committee and to serve as the board member. There's no selection of that person at all.
Actually, Jay Scott, that is not the entirety of my argument at all.
Okay.
I'm also raising the question, I agree totally with Thomas, that the advisory bodies that are appointed by the board and put there for the purpose of advising the board, they are selected by the board. They're not selected by a set of entities that have ongoing policy responsibility, et cetera. I don't care if they agree among themselves on who should represent them as a voting board member. I object to having advisory bodies that are appointed by the board or even appointed by a nominating committee. They are advisory in function. They have no policy development responsibility. They're not accountable on an ongoing basis. And I think that adds a frailty to the board by giving them voting seats.
So you're just talking about the advisory committees they talk about, not... You're not lumping all that level together. You're talking about the GAC and these four or five different advisory bodies as opposed to the policy steering committees.
At this particular point, yes. And I believe very strongly that the policy steering committees should elect their own chair and should elect their own board members.
And then you also feel equally strongly that the advisory committees that have been appointed by the board to be an advisory committee and then should not vote.
They should maintain an advisory function.
Okay.
Well, I can capture the circularity argument perhaps with the following phrasing. Advisory body appointees may not have accountability, especially if the board has responsibility to appoint to the advisory bodies.
Are you saying that you would accept a nominating committee then creating advisory bodies, and then it would be okay?
No, I'm saying that in particular, the board. We make a clear point about nominating committees later. I think we need to have every argument at every place.
Remember the Chinese menu approach?
Yeah. And we also want it to be achievable in terms of what we do on this call in the next 40 minutes. Okay, are we all broadly happy with that original text plus that new wording, not including under government, national government speak for themselves?
This is Harold. I did want to add one other point here, and I don't know if others agree with me, but at least part of the original purpose of ICANN was to prevent this from falling into the government purview, and incorporating a government seat directly on the board, whether in a voting or non-voting capacity, seems to me to be moving in the wrong direction. And I would just include, furthermore, ICANN was originally constituted by a private sector body.
Sure. My understanding at the moment is that this proposal is has lost all favor in most quarters, and in particular including the government. So maybe we don't need to
hammer that.
To hammer it too far, but yeah.
Philip, and if you add it, maybe you could add it as a footnote, because I'm not exactly sure it has totally lost favor in some places, at least in the U.S.
Uh-huh, okay. So if we're happy with that section two, we have question three, that same section, in which I'm just quoting an existing recommendation to do with a nominating committee. We're saying a nominating committee select a quota of board seats which would be less than or equal a number to those elected from the policy development bodies previously adopted.
This is Harold. Could you please add the non-commercial constituency to footnote four?
So the ISP is plus the non-coms. Okay. That's done. Question four concerned the criteria for board members.
Could I just go back on that last point? Having heard the last remark at adding non-coms, it seems strange to me that we're hurtling down this path when we now have a footnote that rules out that text from three of the constituencies.
Two I have, ISPs and non-coms.
I thought there was another one in the footnote.
The GA as well comment.
Yes, there's
This is the discussion I'm driving. I don't have the paper in front of me. This is the discussion about the use of a nominating committee.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It now seems as though the footnotes are getting rather heavy in terms of those who aren't totally happy to go down this route.
But without spending a long time on this, Philip, I'd like to just say something about a very strong concern that I have, and I believe the BC has, about the role and scope of a nominating committee. And perhaps that can be addressed someplace else, but I think we had taken the position that in order to deal with the at-large, something like a nominating committee might be feasible as an interim step until the at-large could get itself together and possibly hold elections or a further selection process.
Mr. Crocetti now joins.
Okay.
So we had not been totally opposed to a narrow concept, but the nominating committee, as conceptualized, is too broad, has too much authority, is too independent, and has no accountability.
Let me add, in support of what Marilyn is saying, that I think that the sense of the non-com would be different if this were a better defined nominating committee. Certainly in the threads of discussion in the non-com list, this has been a point of considerable concern, and you know, some people have said, "Well, we could accept a nominating committee if there were appropriate safeguards as regard to its selection.
Okay, well, I mean, that's a question we're coming to, in fact, in a moment under Section 4, where we're going to discuss what was, in fact, the Rodestrasse proposal put forward by Bruce Tonkin on our last call, where we didn't actually complete our discussions. Maybe a useful point to have that there. We can also make these points when we talk to the committee, perhaps in person, in about 35 minutes' time. Maybe more useful to try to nuance things there rather than go back on an existing adopted recommendation. But to be clear, we are saying in the Nose Council recommendations at present that the only job of a nominating committee should be selecting a quota of board seats, and that is subject to a certain composition of the nominating committee. So we're making it considerably narrower than that envisaged in the committee's paper.
I wonder if it's possible to add in a reference to defining some safeguards as well, to perhaps cover that last point off.
Okay, well, I can put a reference into this, what we're saying under Section 4 then, which we'll discuss in a moment. That'll be a useful little... Section 4, okay. So, moving on, Section 3, the Question 4 concern criteria for board members selected by a nominating committee, if there were, and there is a list of suggested criteria put down by the committee, which I'm proposing that if there was a committee, those would be the right sort of criteria. Basically, talking about broad functional diversity in relevant areas of expertise, geographic diversity, cultural diversity, capacity to understand the global nature of ICANN's actions, ability to contribute to the credibility of the ICANN board, integrity, objectivity, intelligence, capacity for group decision-making, willingness to fulfill responsibilities accepted by a board member. They all seem to be a very sensible set of criteria, and I would not think that we would necessarily disagree with what is there, although perhaps another time we might have things to add to the list. Would that be an appropriate summary? I'm hearing nothing, then I'm presuming we're okay with that. So let's get on to the more interesting discussion then on the nominating committee composition and responsibility. In this section, the committee had sought thoughts and proposals on composition of such a committee, and I had taken up the proposal made by the registrars that if we were to have such a committee, then perhaps a 15-member committee could be appropriate, comprising 5 providers, 5 users, and 5 at large. Thoughts on such a composition? Who would like to speak to that? I'll take a list perhaps on this one. Any takers?
I'll put my name down, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, Tony, kick off and then we'll see how it
okay,
goes.
It may stem from the fact that I wasn't on the last call, but I assume that we are looking at... Yes, I assume we're looking at the way these
Elizabeth, is that you saying hello?
Hello?
Elizabeth, is that you saying hello? Glenn, can you perhaps try and sort that out, and Tony, please continue.
Yes, having missed the last call, I assume that the terminology that's embraced in these terms is the terminology that's been used before in previous discussions, because within the ISPs, we never fully felt that we were happy in going down the path of the way this was set out in the earlier ICANN debates. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, I think so. I mean, we're saying, in any comments we're making now as the Gnomes Council Nominating Committee, we've already defined what role we see for that committee, and therefore these comments are subject to that, not how a nominating committee should be composed for the role envisaged by anybody else.
No, it was the 555 that I was querying.
Yes, well, the 555 was straight out of a registrar's proposal where we discussed that last time, And there had been some attempt at saying what we mean by providers and users. And the wording I've picked up there from the original is relatively general.
Mr. Chairman, this is Ron. May I ask a question, please?
Ron, of course.
Can you define for me the difference between users and at large? It says government or equivalent representatives in the at large. That presumably excludes all other people who, once again, presumably will be represented by the users portion of the committee. Am I correct in reading that?
I think what's intended here is users who are basically those stakeholders that are sort of part of the DNSO that at the moment. So looking at organized users that we know to date, that's commercial users, non-commercial users, intellectual property interests, etc. And under five, we're capturing the sort of the public interest and then trying to see how, you know, and then the question is how do you best find people to represent that public interest. That's the broad difference, I think, in those two.
Okay, thank you.
Other thoughts about this? I mean, for those who are happy with the nominating committee to do a limited role, do you see this as about right for the sort of makeup of a committee, or would you prefer something quite different?
My question related to this, Philip, is thinking of the audience that's going to consider this Mames Council paper, is it will we all have the same understanding of that grouping as set out here?
Well, providers, users, and at large, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Possibly not.
And that is something which I think is far from desirable.
So are you saying we should define them, or we should not be adopting, or we should not be making suggestions at this point?
Well, I looked at this rather coldly after it had been printed,
and
it raised issues for me just how that would be interpreted. Maybe we need some definition, and I haven't sat down and looked at the paper this was extracted from in detail, which was why I raised the original issue. And I wonder whether having that type of flexibility is a good thing or a bad thing at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Just one question. Do others share that concern? I mean, we could happily make no comment at this stage and come back to that if that would be a more useful or safer thing to do. Thoughts on that?
Philip, this is Alexander. We have in the next paragraph, we have a sort of definition in it, so we could put a reference to that, for instance, providers of DNS and numbering services such as registrars, generic TLD registries, etc., and user sector, commercial, non-commercial, individual viewpoints. I think we could use that definition because I agree that providers is not the very best phrase to define something.
Okay, Tony, how do you feel about that if we basically blend in paragraphs 1 and 2? Rather than have them separate at the moment.
I think at this stage that could only be helpful.
Okay, well then let me find out, make that change, and if there are no other comments, we'll move on.
Philip?
Yes.
This is Elizabeth. I was on mute, I'm sorry. I believe that just a clarification a few seconds ago about public interest was very helpful. If we could add that at large government or equivalent representative are here for public interest, it would clarify a little.
I know the public interest. Okay, I can have that at the end.
Philip, I'm just rejoining.
Well, then, welcome back. So, the question six. Is the committee ask if board directors selected by a nominating committee should be ratified by the board, and I'm saying here the NC disagrees. This is based on our last discussion. We felt that would open up the potential for abuse and could create an unhealthy circle of self-perpetuation. I take it we're still clear on that point.
This is Ron again.
Ron.
Forgive my ignorance here. This does relate to question five. As well as question six, the nominating committee, if the nominating committee are to appoint, support these members, the made up of 15 people, how are those people selected? Are they elected? Who elects them? For example, the at-large group, would that be taken from at-large organizations or the government group? Would they be appointments from government agencies?
Well, you're asking some very good questions that we haven't yet fully explored. We're just trying to start the process of who may be in such a group. The point we're trying to answer in question six here was a question specifically raised by the committee, where they asked if there should be any ratification by the board of a nominating committee appointment, and we just felt that was likely to be a rather circular, had the potential for rather an unhealthy sort of circle if there was too much self. If there's too much such connection between the two bodies.
Understood and agreed. Thank you.
Yep. So if we're happy with that, based on our previous discussions, under five, policy development structure, there I put the opening paragraph that we had right at the beginning of the paper, just underlining the fundamental importance of a sufficient budget in order to do anything further, if you like, a policy development, and then our point about staff support. And then we refer to our existing recommendation 11, which is to do with forced staff support to policy development bodies. Under question 7, I split it into two parts because of some slight differences we have with the committee. Under generic names, I'm saying that indeed we agree with a new supporting organization for generic names, and I quote our existing three recommendations on that. But under the steering committee of that new GNSO, in other words, today's Names Council, I'm saying that we disagree to what the committee is proposing. And that's our existing recommendation 19, where we're saying we believe the stakeholders should indeed be electing the representatives of the council or similar body. And then there's just one new comment there, which I think we hadn't actually put in writing before, saying the NC believes that the steering committees, and this is of all policy and development bodies, should select their own chairs. And again, clarifying, we believe that should be the process, not a nominating committee doing that. I take it we all are in favour of that.
Any yes.
Comments? Okay. Question 8 is to do with the Country Code Support Organisation, and we're simply saying yes, we agree to that, and I quote our existing recommendation 12. Question 9 is to do with the, yes. Is that a comment? Okay, maybe a buzz. Question 9 is the Technical Advisory Committee, where we're saying we disagree with the committee's ideas for Technical Advisory Committee, and we quote our existing recommendations 14 and 26, which says that there should be means of cross-policy development between various bodies, but also that any advisory committee should provide neutral technical advice and should not have board representation. Section 6 is to do with the policy development process, and here in the opening line, I'm stressing.
Let me pause for just a minute and ask us all a question. You know, I agree with that point that you just made and was actually someone who very strongly supported it, but I have a question. As a result of the fact that they've killed off the PSO, or they intend to kill off the PSO, how would the technical community end up with electing board seats in their models?
That's a good question.
I think that maybe I don't support killing off the PSO, so I would leave board seats to be elected by whatever the morphed PSO is. But I just point that out to everyone. I'm not suggesting that we accept appointed board seats, but I just point that out to everyone.
Yeah, I think it's an important point. Indeed, yes. I mean, that was the point of our putting recommendation 14 there, that we're saying there should be separate policy bodies for dressing and protocols.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads on to 26, we had before. Section 6 is to do with policy development, and I'm new phrasing there, just saying where we had been our last call, strongly endorsing a bottom-up process, and I quote a series of recommendations which all to do with our view of how that policy development should be working, so all the existing adopted recommendations and their associated footnotes. We now move on to Section 7.
Before we move on to this, I was not on the last call, and I apologize, but I have to say that I agree with the GA chair for both footnotes 8 and footnote 9, and in particular, as regards to the General Assembly, I personally, from my own involvement, think that the interim report statement of what the General Assembly was and how it came to be is dead wrong. It was always intended as being a place for individual participation and not for this sort of cross-constituency meeting room. And, you know, personally feel that this is very inappropriate what has been recommended for the General Assembly.
Okay, so you want that added to those footnotes?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Cool. Philip, this is Ellen.
Ellen, yes.
Yeah, I hope Jay Scott's on the call and can address this point because I think he was on the last conference call longer than I was. But with the statement of the NC strongly endorses a bottom-up process, we made the point that it may be misleading to label things only bottom-up or top-down, and I'm concerned about that being a catchphrase that suggests that we don't think that there should be more management by the board.
Well, Ellen, it's Marilyn, and I want to come to that question of management by the board because the BC does not support management by the board, and when I saw that language in there, I was off the call when that language was accepted, so wasn't able to speak to it. So I need to, whenever we get to that particular point, I think the idea of a board having a liaison is one thing, but management of policy by the board is, I don't...
where are we saying this?
I'm looking under policy development process, R9 process, in which you have this footnote 7. Right before the committee asks for proposals on procedures and time limit, the NC strongly endorses a bottom-up process.
Yep.
I question...
My question was really directed towards Marilyn, where she was saying that we're saying elsewhere about board management. I think under the paragraph following that, we're in recommendation 9, which we discussed some while back, we were saying there should be a clear process, and that process should be managed by the ICANN board. That, you're presumably okay with that, Marilyn?
No, I'm not okay with that. That's the sentence that I think could be misconstrued. I think
we're not saying policy, we're saying process. I mean, if you don't give the ICANN board responsibility for the process of their organization, you may as well forget having a board altogether, surely.
No, boards are not, in most cases, managing boards. And I think we've got to be very careful that we're not buying into elevating work responsibility. There was one discussion that had board members chairing policy development. That's not what boards are elected to do.
Okay, I mean, you're kind of coming a little late in the time for
Philip, I know. I said I was on the call, and then I had to drop off. And
but this is recommendation 9 you're talking about, Marilyn. This was weeks ago. Where does that leave us, anyway, on that new wording in terms of a bottom-up process? Ellen, you wanted... Did you have some additional text in mind to clarify what we mean there?
I think I'm not exactly clear. If you mean that by bottom up and trying to, you know, get various people's opinions, I'm not sure the best way to word it. I'm just concerned that bottom up seems like a catch-all that may mean more to other people, and it's certainly not clear to me.
Okay, well, that's,
that's bottom up is a phrase that has meaning and has had meaning since the white paper. So, Ellen, to the extent that you're concerned it has meaning, it does.
I know, I understand, but I'm relating to Jay Scott's point, not that it doesn't mean anything or not that it hasn't been used, but Marilyn, it's my point that I think it's been bandied about so much that it seems to suggest that we don't think that there should be anything more active happening here. Now, either we're going to leave ICANN the way it is or we're going to try and try and move it along to make it more efficient or not. You know, we can agree on what the best places are doing that. But I think that when we buy straight into the old language of bottom-up process or not, it's buying into additional baggage that maybe we want to reconsider.
Harry here. To speak, Philip.
Can I go ahead?
As long as we're on it, I mean, that particular sentence, that particular half sentence is absolutely loaded. Bottom-up, consensus, and stakeholders are three vexed, contentious terms.
Well, guys, unless we're going to spend a huge amount of time redefining new words, I think that we all agree the policy process needs to be improved, streamlined, have timelines, have staff, have a clearly defined set of criteria that gets followed. I think we all agree that it ought to have broad participation in developing policy and then agreeing to it. I understand some words are loaded, but developing new definitions and new words is going to be a very long, drawn-out process.
Harry again.
Okay.
Actually, I wouldn't have dreamed of getting anywhere near this discussion, but as long as we're getting near this discussion...
Harry, in case I'm quite willing to withdraw my introduction of the discussion...
Well, I mean, we are okay, because, I mean, we have some existing recommendations for the substantial part of the answer to six. What I was doing in the first sentence there is basically making a shorthand reference to what follows, so maybe that's sufficient safeguard for the moment, and we can indeed perhaps nuance the discussion a little further when we talk to the committee in a few minutes.
Philip, just one... additional proposal about it, if I may.
Yeah.
I wondered...
I also wanted the word, Philip. Carry.
Okay, Carry, you're back on the list. Carry on. Was it Ron? Yeah.
Tony, I think.
It was Tony.
Tony, Carry on, yeah.
I think Carry was before me.
Okay. We are making reference here to something bottom-up being managed by the ICANN board, and that is, in three words, the essence of this entire... How should we say it? Unhappiness. So we're exacerbating the situation. We're not clarifying the situation. However, I'm not calling for clarification at this point.
Okay. Tony.
I was just going to try to overcome the problem Marilyn had on the last sentence. I wondered if we could say there, this must be a clear process in order to provide the board with the required advice.
That would be very helpful, and maybe it's a clearly defined process in order to provide the board with that. I would be happy with that, because I don't think it's just clear. I think we've all talked about the fact we think there should be structure and steps, and you know, when I've completed a step, I ought to be able to check it off.
Okay, does anybody disagree then with amending our old recommendation 9 in that way?
This is J. Scott. I completely disagree with going back and changing something that we had agreement on, you know, weeks ago. If Marilyn wasn't on the call for that, I apologize. There are other BC representatives that apparently go to BC meetings that should have spoke up. But that's the recommendation that we've agreed on, and that's the recommendation we need to stick with. Now, if Marilyn wants to put in a footnote that she disagrees with that particular comment and has only come to that realization recently, I certainly have no problem with noting that. But at this particular stage, I think we start to look silly if we've let that... We submitted that committee, what, 3 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
To go back and change it at this point. I have no problem stating that, or if we want to clarify it in some sense to say, you know, when we mean managed by the board, we don't mean policy developed by the board. We mean a process that is clearly defined, you know, or something like that, and telling them what we mean by managed so that it doesn't get misconstrued, if that's the concern, that somehow it will be misconstrued.
Perhaps that's a good way to lead us. We've only got 10 minutes before the committee join us. Why don't Marilyn, you reflect on that and perhaps
Philip, I'm happy to respond. I raised the question earlier. It didn't get captured. I'd be happy with a footnote that just defines that when we say managed by the board, that we're not expecting the board to be intimately involved. And I think we could come back to that later.
Okay.
May I make a very simple suggestion, perhaps? Clearly defined process driven by the stakeholders in which the management takes a more active role than currently. Does that possibly capture the things we want to say? If not, just say no and we drop it.
I think we're...
Let's not waste more time on this. Let me think. I'll do a footnote and we'll see if everybody's happy with that when the next version comes through. Because I wanted to talk in particular about the... Item 7 is a new word in version 2, so if you've got version 1 in front of you, you may not have this wording. It reflects discussion on our last call, and we talked about public oversight and participation. And we had agreed that, contrary to our earlier ideas where we wanted some sort of appeals process for board decisions, we quite liked the concept that the committee had come up with of a possibility of arbitration of alleged bylaw violations in combination with the Office of an Ombudsman for day-to-day complaints. And then we thought through what the problems with arbitration would be in terms of disenfranchising people if you're charging for arbitration and in particular loser pays. And there was a suggestion which I think most people on the call quite liked, which was that the Ombudsman's Office should simply have an appropriate budget and that the Ombudsman themselves would be able to, when they saw a worthy cause, take such a case to arbitration themselves under their budget. And I had put in some wording to reflect that. Does anybody have that wording, or would you like me to read through it? It's six lines.
Go ahead and read it.
Okay. The Ombudsman's Office should have the right to, under our initial recommendation, create the Office of a Professional Ombudsman. We then say, the Ombudsman's Office should have the right to invoke arbitration if the Ombudsman is convinced that ICANN's bylaws have been violated. The Ombudsman's Office should be endowed with an appropriate budget. And then there's a note of explanation, rationale. External arbitration imposes costs to those invoking the process. Some costs to deter frivolous arbitration requests are appropriate, but they might hinder legitimate requests. This negative effect can be mitigated by having the Ombudsman invoke the arbitration process.
This is Harold Feld. A clarification, please.
Yep.
Would there still be a right of private... could you take this up if the Ombudsman said no? Or is the Ombudsman going to be a...
We're envisaging this, I think, as a fallback. In other words, you as a private party want to go ahead and go to arbitration. You can do so at any time. That's fine. If you don't have the money, you can then go to the Ombudsman's office and say, hey, look, here's a good case. Can you do it for us?
Could there be language to that effect in the recommendation?
I can try a clarification.
It's a footnote that this does not foreclose, this is not intended to foreclose the right of individuals to pay for arbitration themselves and take up issues even if the Ombudsman does.
Well, perhaps we can do easier in a slightly less legal way.
I think it's rather clear what is meant, because we are talking about external arbitration there. And the whole notion of deterring frivolous arbitration requests by imposing some cost just doesn't make sense if the only party invoking arbitration is an internal ombudsman.
Can I probably do this by saying the Ombudsman Office should also have the right to invoke arbitration, and that clearly means that. As envisaged.
Is there a reason not to include language that makes it clear that individuals can proceed at their own expense?
Only because it seems a bit like tautology.
This may just only be my experience as a lawyer in the American legal system, am very concerned that if the right is not explicitly preserved, it will be read out. And so, if
okay.
prison,
I mean, we're writing a document of recommendation, not drafting legislation. But I'm happy to put a footnote into that to that effect.
All right.
Okay, so I presume we're happy with that as amended. Funding was the next section.
Philip, this is
yes.
Scott. As we move into the next section, I just have a query, and it seems to be something that nobody has answered to my satisfaction. Not us, not the IPC, not ICANN's own Evolution and Reform Committee. What I see here, just as fiscally prudent owner of a business, is the fact that we've asked ICANN for two fundamental changes that are going to be very expensive. One is the Office of an Ombudsman. Now we're adding a layer of arbitration invoked by the Ombudsman that ICANN would pay for somehow, and for this professional staff that will assist the policy development making bodies and be dedicated to that, to assist them and to make it more efficient. So I see, you know, from an ICANN that's been reported to me by those now in control and that it's broke and can't do what it needs to now because it doesn't have money, we've added two, three additional significant, in my mind, expenses. But nobody tells me where the money's coming from. I see a lot of generalized hinting around and kind of sniffing at the edges of recommendations, but I see nobody telling me where the money's coming from. And I'm really concerned about the fact that nobody has ever answered that core question.
I thought we did talk about where the money would
Well, I think we've talked about that we thought that it should come from an allocation, but I don't see anybody saying how it should come. I see we say where it should come from, but we've already getting money from there. I mean,
we're getting some money from there.
Okay, we're getting some money from there. We say in our core funding could potentially come from more than one source, but the bulk of funds should ultimately derive from revenues of GTL registrants fees and be administered via registrars and or registries. Well, that's where a lot of it comes right now, so I don't see any change. The difference is, if that's where the money is coming from, should there be more of that money coming into ICANN? We don't seem to say that.
I see. Okay.
See,
I think that's what we're meaning. Perhaps you're right. We're not saying that explicitly.
I mean, I'm just concerned because I read that one of the things that I came away from the committee's paper was, damn, I thought at least they'd tell us where the money was going to come from or give us some idea of where they're thinking, and nobody's answered that question. I think, Marilyn, we did discuss it. Mm. I thought we had discussed raising that money,
right.
Raising the allocation to a greater pool of allocation.
Right.
But and I don't read that in this, and I think we need to be clear there. And I'm sorry if I'm kind of getting out of order, Philip.
That's okay. We're just coming out of the funding anyway. Certainly, my understanding anyway of what we're...
How's Graham being? Now, James?
Thank you. My understanding of what... We meant there was precisely that, really, that we're saying, first of all, that, you know, that there is one source of funding, and that's good distance fees from GTLDs. Think of that as your core funding. Everything else is secondary, so don't base your budget, etc., on that. Is the implication there. And once you set up your ICANN and say it should have this and this and this, you expect it to then come up with a budget, which we believe should then be approved and get that money from go distance fees. Implication, you're going to get a bit more from go distance fees than you probably do at the moment, which will make an insignificant difference to any individual registrant. I think that's probably where we were, but we're not saying a lot of that explicitly. Anyway, do others want to comment on this funding issue in the next 5 minutes or so remaining?
I'm with Jay Scott. I thought we had discussed it. I thought we discussed the fact that the fee needed to be a higher contribution per name, but that it would still be a very small contribution per name if it were spread across the roughly 30. Actually, I've got the statistics here. There's roughly well in excess of 20 million. I've got the numbers someplace. I'm digging around for them.
Yeah, but anyway, it's a small amount for any individual registrant to give a substantial difference to ICANN's existing budget. Yeah. And I can certainly include a note in our in the preamble to that to make that clear. If that would help.
I think we need to do something when we say that, you know, to that effect.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments on funding? So, well, basically, there was related to our existing recommendations 5, 6, and 7. On budget of process, which is a separate question from the committee, well, asking comments, making a phrase there, I think we should come out also in previous discussions. The ICANN budget approval process should be independent of those who administer ICANN funding, just a clear conflict of interest point. Under government on 9, we're talking about the proposed seat on the board for GAC, where we've already said we disagree, and we're quoting existing 25 and 27, where we say what we believe the goal of government should be. Point 10, outside resources, was to do with the use of external expertise, which the committee is proposing, and I'm mentioning there that indeed we already do that in some working groups, we have done in the past. And I quote our existing recommendation 20 on how we see work in the future working. And then the penultimate section 11 to do with the internal ICANN structure. The committee proposes an internal divide within ICANN of policy and operational functions. And I'm saying that broadly we agree, and I quote recommendations 2 and associated 8. Where we talk about having delineated divisions within ICANN responsible for different things. And that leaves us with the last section on transition. I certainly made a statement there that we support the gradual evolution of ICANN. So we're going to be joined in a few moments by members of the committee. But other comments on any of the aforementioned before we do that?
Philip, could you say that there are maybe 3 overreaching or chapeau issues, one of them being the idea that entities, policy entities, should elect their own chairs and should elect the board members that they put forward, that idea is a key principle that the Names Council supports?
I think if you're looking at differences between our approach and the committee, indeed that's one clear one, isn't it? The if you like, the degree of self-determination of your policy development bodies, how they agree to their own steering committee, how they contribute also to the board, yeah. And that, to my mind, ties in also with our view of the process and what we were saying earlier about bottom-up and how that should be done, which seems to be very much the fundament of ICANN originally. Anyway, other questions, comments?
And so, to your second point, a key difference, because I think it addresses something that Ellen said earlier, are we saying that no change is needed? And I think, in fact, we're saying significant change is needed, but that our idea of how to get the change is through establishing procedures, timelines, staff support, et cetera, rather than completely starting over with a new top-down, recreated process.
Yeah, indeed. Other thoughts? I notice we now have Alejandro Pesantia has joined us and Hans Kleinbrink. You're very welcome. Alejandro, are you now unmuted? Maybe he will be in a moment. Hans, are you there?
I am there.
Excellent. Welcome. Well, then perhaps we'll move with your agreement, Council, into phase two, really, which is just starting this discussion with the committee. Hans, have you had the chance to read any version of our replies that have been posted to the Council List and others.
I 100% he joined.
Thank you.
Hi, hello.
Hello, is that Alejandro?
Yes, hi.
Hello there.
Hi.
Morning.
Hi, Alexander is here as well.
Good, please.
Okay, so we now have, we welcome Alejandro, and we have Hans Kreinbrink, and I think Lyman will be joining us in a little while. He was on the very beginning of the call, and said he would indeed call back in again at about an hour onwards, which is around about now. Alejandro, what I'm planning on doing is
Philip, one point, I will have to leave in about 40 minutes, about
okay.
quarter to the hour, okay?
40 minutes, okay, that's noted. What I was planning on doing is, so we've just gone through this draft paper that we've done in terms of answering the paper that your committee had produced,
yes.
Making a few minor changes to some of the words of sort of clarification. And I was really going to go just to kick off with some of the key points, I think, that come out of that, where there are some points of major difference between us, and we can perhaps have those discussions. In fact, Marilyn had just been helping with that analysis already. I think one of the key differences between us at the moment is the role we would give to the policy development bodies, whereas we agree with things like having a separate body for generics and CCTLDs. We still believe they should be much more self-determining than the committee's current thinking seemed to be. They should indeed elect their own steering committees, they should elect their own chairman, and they should still contribute to electing at least half of the board. And there is agreement from some constituencies, but all constituencies, that you could have a nominating committee to represent half or less of the board as well, and that would be the only role for a nominating committee. That may be a way of basically doing the whole setup for the board, and we believe in liaison roles for anybody else, advisory committees, etc., should come and go, but should not be entrenched somehow within the scope of the board. So I think it was part of that is a fundamental structural difference in terms of how we see stakeholders, etc., reacting within the bodies and how that reflects to the side of the board. So perhaps, Alejandro, why don't you respond to that now, and then we'll see how other comments from those council members follow on from that.
Philip, we have been looking at the response and the input from the Names Council.
Yep.
And as you know, I mean, a few other bodies and people, besides the public comments that were made in the context of the U.S. government last week, which deserve their own analysis separately. And I think there's a lot more opening now for this kind of thought. I can't exactly foresee the results, because there are lots of points of views in the community, as you know. But mm-hmm. certainly, I'm going to be not only looking at, but pushing for a more self-determining role. And there's this question about representatives or delegates, which may be separate from the chairs of the bodies. And I would like to know more what the Names Council has thought about this. But in general, let me tell you that, I mean, there is, I think, an open ear for more self-determining. As you have called it, within the policy development bodies.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely, I mean, it's something that's going on.
Okay, that's encouraging. Hans, do you feel the same way?
What I'm really interested in is what the, let's say, the arguments of the Names Council are to include the policy development with the, let's say, the selection of directors. And it seems, I think, in my view, it boils down to a sort of a power issue. Whereas the views, at least in the committee and part of the board, is that the board should develop a team spirit in a way that people are not representatives from certain communities, but at most are delegated from certain communities and have an intention to work together as a team, to include the supporting organizations and the advisory councils in a, let's say, a, in my view, a liaison capacity, whether it's voting or non-voting is to be debated, is the premise on where the PSOs and the advisory councils, including the GAC, had a seat on the board.
But why, are you saying then that there's a belief in some quarters that having a nominating committee to choose a certain representative of a certain interest is somehow likely to find a better person who would be a better board member, a better team player, than if the DNSA or the ASO elected somebody?
Well, it, at least in working through a nominating committee, you can balance qualities, characters, all the different aspects you need in a well-selected board, whereas in appointing, you work towards a sort of a parliamentary system where you have the representatives of the, or the delegates from certain factions. That's it's a philosophical. It's more a matter of philosophy than it is maybe in a practical situation.
Yeah, I quite agree. I mean, my experience of boards is that good board members tend to come from all sorts of places, and it's more a function of the person, perhaps, than the interest that they try to represent well or badly.
Philip?
Yeah.
It's Marilyn. May I speak?
Yeah, it is. I was just about to see if there were people who wanted to ask questions. Let me just take a list of those who would like to say something. So I have Marilyn there. Who else? Well, that makes it easy. Marilyn, go ahead.
I would like to respond on this particular topic. Alex, Hans, welcome. We really appreciate your joining us. I know everyone will express that themselves. I'd like to speak to the issue that Hans has just identified for just a minute in the following way.
Hello?
I think it's important for all of us to remember that when ICANN was formed, we were creating it from whole cloth. That is, it didn't exist, and we were trying to create something that would work, and we did try out a number of concepts, I think, in order to get to where we are today, which from a business user perspective, we're not, it's our view that ICANN has done pretty well, and yet we also appreciate the fragilities that it faces. I think that the outcome that Hans has identified is should be a shared goal, but I think that can be achieved still by having the policy organizations elect their own board members, and perhaps the issue is to make sure that there is a criteria, as we have tried to endorse in the paper that Philip has been working on behalf of the Names Council, to submit, that there is criteria that enables and assures board members with those characteristics emerge. They can emerge just as effectively from a policy organization as they can from a nominating committee process if we buy into and support the outcome that Hans has defined.
Okay, any comment on that? Alejandro, Hans?
I think that the balance here, I mean, the issue here is the balance between the different personalities, outlooks, and so forth. And the danger we see in the future is that at least for a couple of years, I would say personally, maybe it's a longer period, you really have to get a very well working board, widely representative, but where people are really looking for this more general common good. I trust that, it must be that the people who are on the board right now, let's say elected by the Names Council, consider ourselves good representatives and reasonable team players. But it doesn't seem ensured by the model of great indicative representatives. So we're looking at a way to balance this, and would like to hear a lot more of the way the Names Council is looking at this in order to be able to discuss it more internally and come back with something by the end of this week, which can really bring together some agreement.
Alejandro, I just want to respond, Philip. Is it clear, Philip, in the response we put forward that we are talking about two ways? The Names Council is talking about two paths to the board, one from the policy entities and one through a nominating committee process?
Could you repeat the beginning of your sentence? It's two what?
Manon was just saying that what we have in the Names Council recommendation is basically two paths to making up the board. We believe that about half the board seats should be from the policy development bodies, and we foresee four of those, and the other half could be done by a nominating committee process. So we are, we're meeting perhaps some of those concerns halfway. But still believe strongly in the accountability back through those involved in policy development to be part of the board as well.
Okay, yeah. We haven't. I personally haven't looked in enough detail to the way this balances out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. One thing I think that also had concerned the council in our discussions on nominating committee, as I said, it's not something that is universally supported by every constituency. Of course, becomes a question of, well, who is on the nominating committee, and do you not end up, particularly with the nominating committee with very wide powers of appointment, do you not end up having a huge fight in terms of who gets onto that committee first? So that they will hopefully represent your interests, which of course is defeating the prime objective, I guess, you have in thinking through that concept. Have you had discussions on that in terms of your own thoughts as to composition of the committee?
We are receiving a very wide type of input and ideas for the composition of the committee, mostly for the size and for its sectorization, whether certain groups like, GTLD registrars, GTLD registrars, and so forth, should be appointing one or the nominating committee people should come from one of these communities or another in a structured way, plus some slots that would be open. The thoughts have been expressed that one should be very careful. I mean, similar to what you are saying, that we don't replay the politics that we are trying to avoid in the petty politics, let's say, because you always have politics, but you're trying not to have a lot of petty politics in the board and in board integration. And the thought is out whether you're going to reproduce that for the nominating committee or you're really going to be able to have this common good dominate the composition of the nominating committee and its work.
Sure. Is the problem you're trying to solve, Alejandro, the at-large issue as much as anything else at the moment? Is that where there have been historically some problems in the board and we're looking for a way of factoring in public interest in a better way?
Personally, I think it's touchy to speak of the at-large at this moment, and because it's very much fetishized and one wouldn't know exactly what one is talking about. So let me be more precise. My concern, at least, and I think the one I detect in all committee members, is, let's say, a sort of stewardship for the public interest.
Sure.
In a very wide way. You can see that even CDT and Alan Davidson, for example, in their speech before the Senate hearings, which was, I guess, a place where you wouldn't expect a lot, them giving a lot of leeway, they have come to the point of, public interest representation, whether through elections or another mechanism, and admitting that the at-large is not essentially optimal. So that explains why I say not necessarily speak of the at-large, and yes, speak of the public interest.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's something that you would receive a good echo about around this table. Council members, other questions for the committee?
This is Harold Feld.
Harold, anybody else?
Harold.
Ask a question? Okay, Harold, go ahead.
It's my question pertains to this nominating committee, and Phil touched on this, and my I have two sets of concerns that I'm hoping can be addressed. One is that I'm hearing that the primary thought about the nominating committee from your answers to Phil's question is that you are concerned with its ability to return good board members through some undefined criteria, but a number of folks, including myself,
Simon Chapin joined,
including myself, have been concerned that the process of selecting the nominating committee is not merely about making sure that you get good board members, whatever that means, but also that the results of these selections are regarded by the broader community as being legitimate and conferring legitimacy on the board, not just being an exercise in what I have called merely confirming our own wisdom. The unfortunate problem when you get groups of like-minded people together is that there's a tendency to convince ourselves that we're all, you know, wise and wonderful, and we go through these little exercises among ourselves that confirm it. And I'm you know, very concerned that that this nominating committee, if that is the method that's ultimately chosen, not become you know, this sort of, as I say, self-confirmatory exercise that we keep getting board members who are exactly like us. And so I just would ask, has there been discussion within the board on, number one, are there some concrete details that can be shared with us at this point as to the direction of selection? And number two, you know, to what extent are people worried about this aspect that the nominating committee is not just, you know, a way of getting good board members, but also needs to serve this sort of legitimizing function if that's going to be the method by which board members are selected?
Okay, Hunter, before you answer that, let me just welcome Lyman Chapin back to the call.
Thank
Lyman,
you,
you're welcome.
Thank you.
We're, as you would have guessed from what you've been listening to for the last minute or so, we're discussing the concept of nominating committee, and I'd earlier just reminded the call of where the Names Council is on this, in that we believe basically half the board should be elected by new supporting organizations. We're calling them generically policy development bodies.
Right.
And the other half of the board could be elected by a nominating committee, and that would be the one and only role of a nominating committee. We see it should do nothing about the policy development bodies, committees, or chairs, or anything else like that.
Okay.
And that's sort of where we are in our thinking, and we're just trying to discuss now you know, why a nominating committee might be useful for some things, and we talked about the public interest, and that was the nature of the question that Harold was posing. Perhaps, Alejandro, you're ready to share some thoughts with us now.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I should speak, you think, Phil?
Please, yes.
Okay, I share very much Harold Feld's concerns, but are essentially, I mean, if I can bring both of them together, it's a problem of legitimacy. I think that what we're doing is a new balancing act between two things that provide the board and I can general legitimacy. But let's concentrate very clearly and neatly on political legitimacy for the board itself. Right, Harold?
Yes, yes.
We have a problem of legitimacy. We have a, I mean, let's say, the whole exercise that led to the at-large was a very serious attempt, I can tell you, because I've taken part of it in many of its steps personally. It was a very well-intended and high effort, let's say energy-consuming effort, to provide legitimacy through representation. We have concluded that that's not really working well enough to to put all, as we say in Mexico, all the eggs on one basket, or all candles to one flame on that side. And why we have been doing that, this exercise in trying to achieve legitimacy through representation, we have lost a lot of legitimacy, which should arise from efficacy, from achieving things. The thing that makes ICANN questioned in many fronts is not only representation, but the fact that it's not achieving enough. It's taking us a lot of effort and time that maybe are not necessary all the time for achieving this. So we're balancing again the two sources of legitimacy. One of them is the sensitivity and the openness and the listening and the not exactly representation in the way of votes, but of having channels open for the voices of different communities or people who are concerned with ICANN. That's legitimacy through representation in a different way, which is not direct representation, and the legitimacy that comes from achieving things. It's not that we're putting one above the other, it's that we're balancing them again in a way that does ensure achieving things. That's a very personal view, but I think it may reflect what other people in the committee think, and it certainly reflects in the same way in the way we're operating. So, in practical terms, consequences for Harold's concerns, we are trying to achieve a nominating committee that will be sensitive and open, and that will have enough renewal mechanisms. We are taking very seriously from the beginning all the criticism that the nominating committee could be just a self-reproducing engine, and we're definitely trying to avoid that.
Okay. Supposing, you were successful in getting a nominating committee of the quality you would like, do you nevertheless accept that perhaps its role in what it would be nominating is perhaps pretty wide at the moment in the committee's earlier thoughts, and are you happy to see that role reduced?
Well, it's been evolving. I wouldn't say that it's a settled thing, but it certainly is clear that as the discussion goes on, that more self-determination within the supporting organizations that seem to be there at first in the first draft is definitely a direction that the committee needs to be moving.
Okay. Perhaps there are two other issues that may be useful to talk about, one of which I think is funding, and we had an early discussion about that. And the second may be advisory bodies and what their role and nature should be. On funding, perhaps let me just kick off with I think where the Names Council message is at the moment, in that we really believe it is the number one thing that we need to get right, because funding means the ability to have staff support for policy development, and it's only going to be with staff support policy development, you're going to get policy development of the quality and the speed that we all want in ICANN. So we see those two things as being extremely important changes that we need to make, which means any other changes are likely to be insufficient to create improvement of the way we want, unless we're able to do those. And in particular, on funding, we're saying we want, you can think of all the various ways that ICANN is funded at the moment, but there is one pool of resource out there, and that is the fees paid by GTLD registrants, and that should always be looked at as a core funding, and everything else should be secondary. So the issue with CCTLD funding and RIR funding, etc., should very much be secondary to the way the budget is created and set.
Yes.
Those two things in combination, I think, is very much where we believe main improvements will flow from. And we had just started discussion early on this call as to the nature of that funding and what it meant maybe in terms of a slightly increased take of the per capita fee from each GTLD registrant, which we may need to make clearer in our future wording. Is that a message you're getting from other communities as well?
When we're getting messages about the funding, we're getting several different ones. Many But I would say that many of these come from communities within the names, within the DNSO, mm-hmm. are agreeing with a per domain. See, we are also getting those from other sources, from the, you know, a very wide community, including people involved in the at-large efforts and so forth. That seems to be, let's say, we're not hearing anything against it. I'm very concerned, and I have said this repeatedly, that this will seem fine and nice until it doesn't, and it will blow up. So all the thought that the Names Council can give us here will be very important. We don't want this to, you know, everybody seems to be in consensus about per domain fee, and then suddenly have this domain name tax and no taxation without representation fight that actually blew up the domain name fee previously. And otherwise, what we should do is, you know, not call it in a way that that looks like that, agree with the people that are collecting the money, which is the registrar for registry, and continuing an elaboration of the present day formulas with a more solid basis and with a more ample funding as a result. But I think here the discourse that the NIMS Council and the DNSO can provide is vital.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, sir. Lyman or Hans, do you have any comments about funding?
Well, this is Hans. I couldn't agree more with what Alejandro just said. Support from the NIMS Council is very important for us, I believe. We all have to be very careful to not fall into the trap of the tax issue we had a couple of years ago on this. I still think that what the NIMS Council says here is very important and can help ICANN forward.
No.
Richard, I'll just chime in and say that this is a subject that we've had a chance to discuss within the Evolution and Reform Committee, and I think as you're hearing, we are very much of the same mind.
Okay, I think that's encouraging. Are the Names Council members who want to make any comment on the funding issue?
It's Marilyn.
Marilyn, go ahead.
I suffered through with ICANN and the rest of you the debacle that we faced when some misinformation was conveyed to U.S. members of Congress. I think that there were circumstances that existed then. There was a paranoia and concern about the concept of internet taxes overall. The amount that was chosen was a dollar. It was easy to become tied up in the idea that this was a new fee because no time was spent educating members of Congress that, in fact, the services they receive, even at that time, through a monopoly environment, were still funded by fees that fees that the registrant paid. I think we need to be I think, demonstrated and will need to continue to demonstrate sensitivity about how this is marketed, so to speak, and the educational effort that will be needed for policymakers, not just in the U.S. but elsewhere, that this is, in fact, the way that ICANN is funded today, and that we are talking about a small increase in order to ensure improved service. I do think that the registrars so far, and I don't know who's on the phone from the registrars right now, but I believe the registrars have spoken in support of the need to have improved service, and if it takes a bit more of a fee to pay for it, that they are in support of that, but I need to leave them to speak for themselves. Marketing, so to speak, is going to be absolutely essential, and we are going to have to all be able to explain why this is an appropriate fee that is assessed to pay for services that are being provided.
I fully agree with you, Marilyn. This Hans.
No, I think indeed that's probably right. But I think an important thing you said earlier, Mark, I think, is that we're not actually seeking enormous change from where we are now. We're simply saying let a new ICANN set its budget and then seek through its existing mechanism, but in particular through GTL geodistance fees, to secure that budget in full. So we're not looking again also for revolutionary means of fundraising. In our remaining 5-10 minutes, perhaps it'd be worth talking about advisory bodies and committees. One area where the Names Council had disagreed with the committee's proposals concerned the nature of advisory bodies, essentially. The committee had within its proposals, I think, with an objective in particular of better communication, the idea that various advisory bodies could be represented on the board and probably in a voting way. Having discussed this on the Names Council, we've come to a different conclusion. I think there's one aspect to do with government, which is different, and I understand indeed the taste of the government advisory committee at the moment is not in favour of such approach anyway. But in particular, on the technical advisory side, we felt that probably greater flexibility was necessary, and that certainly having technical advisory committees for a range of subjects may well be useful from time to time, and they don't necessarily need to be standing committees, they can come and go. And in order to have that flexibility, though, you don't want to entrench voting board representation to the chair from such a body, because that will be a natural break, a natural stop to having future such technical advice. And so we felt that the objective of perhaps improved communication was counterbalanced overwhelmingly by the lack of flexibility you would build in there in your advisory bodies.
A very important type of footprint. I'm taking note carefully.
Yeah, that's grand to hear. Other comments from the council or the committee on that point?
Well, this is Hans. I would like to make a distinction, I believe, between the existence of advisory committees, the liaison function between the advisory committee and the board, and the board's representation of the chair of or a designee from an advisory committee in a voting or non-voting capacity.
Okay.
I believe that a number of advisory committees, as we have identified them, are in existence, and there may be arguments, but we haven't said the final word there yet and haven't come to a conclusion. To have a technical advisory committee adjunct to ad hoc committees on specific topics, but a more generic advisory committee on technical issues who could be sort of a sparing partner on technical issues for the board in at least a liaison function, which means that the chair or designee from such a committee would have full access to the board meetings and also the possibility to intervene in board discussions. Whether or not you give the designee also a voting capacity on the board is something which will have to be decided on the final balance on the composition of the board and the type of people who will be functioning on the board. So the final word there hasn't been said on this issue. I have noted from several areas that a number of parties in the community have a clear wish to have a more structured access in advisory capacity to ICANN than just on an ad hoc basis.
I think that's a very considered observation. I think certainly everybody would be typically happy with the idea of better liaison, if that means having liaison representative observers. That is a different nature to designated voting representatives as part of your board. I think one of the paths of reasoning that the Names Council is also uncomfortable with was the concept which started with saying there no longer needs to be a protocol supporting organization. Part of that role will be subsumed by a technical advisory committee, and that ends up with a chair on the board, sort of because in the past the protocol SO used to have some board representation. And I think our thinking was that we didn't see, we were unable to understand the advantages of getting rid of the protocol supporting organization and replacing it by such a committee. So our thinking stopped there, if you like, and then I think we would probably agree with you in terms of whatever your advisory bodies are in general, you want to do what is best in terms of liaison. I hope, Council, I'm right in summarizing that up from my earlier discussion.
Mm-hmm. I understand, and but the route the committee took towards the reasoning was not the one you expressed as was perceived by the next time.
Sure, that was certainly a perception that is out there in terms of how some things had moved through. But I think the we're certainly agreed on the objectives. I think in terms of advisories and liaison. Council, we've got about 5 minutes before we lose Alejandro and the committee. Other questions on any other parts of our set of recommendations you think you'd like to raise?
This is Harold. I want to repeat something that I said earlier, and I guess I don't know that it will do much good, but I would ask the board to reconsider their thinking on this. But I think the thinking on the General Assembly is historically inaccurate, and the GA always existed as a place for individual interests to try to come together within the ICANN community, and not as sort of a forum for established constituencies, but was meant, because there was no individual domain name holders constituency, this was initially supposed to be a place where individuals and others affected who felt they did not fit into a constituency could come and participate in some formalized way in the ICANN structure. My concern is that the way that the Committee on Evolution Reform has portrayed the GA as being some sort of agora for the established constituencies rather than a place where those who are not covered in the existing and recognized constituencies can come together and discuss matters and have some kind of at least advisory role. I'm concerned that the way this is going is eliminating what has been a necessary element for individuals and others who would otherwise fall through the cracks. And I'm wondering if there has been any talk within the board of what do you do if you're going to change the nature of the General Assembly in this fashion. What do you do then with those who would seem to be not participants in a particular constituency?
Harold, Alejandro Pisanti speaking. I think that it's not completely accurate the way you describe it. The GA was formed, and sorry to say again this ugly phrase, I was there at the beginning. There was a very strong tension between different views of what it should be. One of them was it should be the place, as you mentioned, for everybody that was not included in constituencies, and the other one was a place for cross-constituency dialogue, with an allowance, of course, for people who were, let's say, in emerging constituencies or the like. It was, from the start, intended to be a cross-constituency dialogue place. This hasn't happened. At present, it's mostly excluding by the way dialogue is conducted and so forth, by a number of reasons, which I won't dwell on. It's mostly excluded people from the constituencies who find their need for representation and their dialogue with other people in other ways than in the General Assembly. Unfortunately, it has drowned a lot of voices. It's again very necessary to keep a forum where people can speak outside the constituency framework, and where people who are not in the constituency framework can speak. But the lack of a meeting place, a discussion forum, which goes cross-constituency, has also, in the view of many of us, severely hampered the way that the BNSO can operate. So we are looking for a fix for that, and it's not just doing away with the General Assembly or the public forums, but a way of rebalancing them again, and maybe making sure that there is this space, very well-managed discussion with, you know, structures, advances, or diversity of points of view, and so forth, for the cross-constituency communication, and a separate or place, maybe with a good communication with this one, for this very general, unstructured community which you mentioned, and which has also made some undeniably valuable, what do you call this in English, contributions.
I think it's interesting what you say. I think what we had done in the Names Council recommendations, this is particularly recommendations 23 and 24, is attempted to capture precisely those two separate roles that the GA historically has played, and to say, you know, neither have been done satisfactorily in the past, and let's try to therefore think of ways in which we can better achieve both of those. That may well be that the language needs to change, and we're not getting rid of a General Assembly. We're creating instead a constituency liaison body, and we've got better consultation in another forum. But I think the objectives of saying these are two key roles that we want to achieve, but we need to do that in a better way, and identifying the fact there are two separate roles is a very good starting point, I think.
Yes, I've taken very seriously these recommendations, and as I say, and you remember, Philip, I mean, because you've been part of this debate often, we do need both roles, but right now we don't have the most vital one, the one I perceive as the most vital one, which is the cross-constituency communication.
Mm-hmm.
Both are vital, but in the way I say that this is a more vital one is that its lack has hampered the most the progress of the DNSO in general.
Sure.
It had the worst impact, let's say. Philip, I can stay for about 10 or 15 minutes more.
Okay. Turns
out.
That's great news. Other questions for the committee from council on any of our key issues?
Philippe?
Yes, Elizabeth.
Thomas.
I got Elizabeth and Thomas. Anybody else want to speak for the moment? Elizabeth, you want to talk presumably about something to do with the CCTLDs?
Yes.
Let me stop you 2 seconds. And Thomas, are you on the matter we were just on, the GA?
Yes.
Okay. Elizabeth, would you be upset if I reversed the speaking order and let Thomas go first so we can finish off on that subject?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, I would like to follow up a little bit on the Names Council's recommendations and on the notion of separating the roles of cross-constituency and, maybe of cross-constituency communication versus communication to individuals or groups or whatever who are not represented as a constituency. If you look at the Names Council recommendations, the basic idea behind the definition of the GA given in these recommendations seems to be that the DNSO would be able, or the GNSO, or however you call it, would be able to achieve representational closure within the constituency model. And from this point of view, about every reasonable interest could be actually be present on that kind of closed GA. Then there is a second notion that some fora should be added, and that these should, at some point during a public comment period, should possibly participate in the policy-making process. Now, this has several problems. First of all, the fora are not necessary if you have representational closure. Second, if you are having fora, as a vehicle to achieve that representational closure, it follows immediately that the GA would at many points of time not be representative of all the interests which should be represented in it, and likewise the entire genus O would not be representative of these interests. Now, the GA has, to this point of time, occasionally at least succeeded in being a vehicle by which some interests which may not be as well represented in the DNSO as they deserved to be, GA has served as a vehicle by which such interests have been participating, for instance, in the task force process. Designing a GA which is closed would remove this possibility, and quite frankly, a public comment period or process is certainly not viable for this kind of participation. That is one point of criticism I personally have with the Names Council's recommendations on this. The second thing, which is forgotten by making a strict distinction between open public dialogue and GA, which serves as a cross-constituency body, is that dialogue between constituencies may quite well profit from participation external to constituencies. And for that reason, I really do not believe in the simple recipes presented in the Names Council recommendations. I'm not sure, on the other hand, that the even simpler recipe to leave the GA as it is now is a viable one either. But I think it deserves some more thought. One of the questions which should be asked is, why is the GA attractive for some forces which may not wish to have members of the DNSO's constituencies represented in the GA, and can these incentives be removed somehow? And I think that thinking should rather go in this direction and look at a way to make the GA a reasonable discussion and participation forum, as opposed to an attempt to actually complement constituencies in a decision-making manner. This is, I believe, something which should be really prosecuted by the Council and by the Evolution and Reform Committee, and I respectfully believe that the current recommendations of at least the Names Council are severely mistaken. Thank you. I hope I have made myself clear upon that, and if I didn't, please ask.
Okay, Thomas, thanks for that. Any reaction, committee, before I go on to Elizabeth?
May I comment quickly on this?
Sure.
I think that with the GA we have both what I call an anatomy and a physiology question.
I'm sorry?
One of them is an anatomy and a physiology question. That would mean one is the structure and the other is the way it's functioning. And I think, I mean, Thomas and Alexander Svensson have really made the enormous effort to make the GA work, and we still have to see an example of whether this is a sustainable effort, whether the improvement can be sustained, and so forth. There's, as I said, undeniably some important contributions that have come from the GA, and also some serious troubles which they themselves, and you themselves, Thomas and Alexander, are facing. I don't know if we can do this only by structural improvement or, let's say right now, by structural prevention only. That's what we're looking at. So we'll be listening very openly to whatever improvement you can propose that substantiate your proposals to keep the GA as it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Geraldo, thank you for that. Elizabeth, your question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Alexandro, in the document Reform Committee has been producing on 31st of May, there is a huge section related to so-called CNSO. And in that section, there is a lot of assumption, which some of them I understand absolutely correct, but some of them at not necessary the ones I am meeting every day in within CCTLD group, whether it is CCTLD on the worldwide or CCTLD as European ones. And there is a lot of advices and, well, rules in this section which the reforming committee consider CCTLD should accept. So it is something which make me worry, because I do not believe that this topic has been discussed with CCTLD community as a whole, and we expect to do so in Bucharest, and CCTLD being exactly worldwide, our process is much slower than the fast track some of other partners in ICANN may afford. There is one particular sentence which I wish to stress over this meeting, which is important that everybody realize that it is not necessarily possible. The sentence says, to the extent that policy relating to the global issue are developed through the ICANN process, the CNSO members agree to abide by them. The point is that it may be not within CCTLD administrators, CCTLD managers' powers to accept, to abide to ICANN policies. Not to all of them, because they live in their country and they live in legal system of their country. So it is something very important to understand, and I hope we will have a fruitful discussion in Bucharest.
Okay, any reaction to that?
I don't know if Hans or Lyman has any. I do have one. I bow to them first.
No, go ahead, Alex.
If I may react to Elizabeth's comment, I think it's a very good one. We would hope that the CCTLD community may react to our question what ICANN should do with it, how they see themselves within the global internet community as CCTLD operators.
Okay, Alex?
Well, that's, first of all, exactly I'm behind, I mean, together with, I'm with Hans in his comments. We have to hear a lot more from the CCTLD community in respect to this particular aspect. I think there's not a unified point of view what we're getting from the CCTLD communities, and we still have to get a lot more dialogue, and I fully commit to that. But, what we're not hearing is a unified voice from the CCTLD community. We hear the center view in particular, and a few other countries, which, as Elizabeth has said, they state very firmly, very, very loudly, that there's no global issue with them, that it's all local. And we hear from many others that they don't believe this. I mean, there's two positions which are divergent from the European CCTLDs at present. One of them is that many CCTLD administrators believe that they do have a global responsibility beside the local one they have. And they see this even very egotistically as an extension of their responsibility to their local community, which is making the internet resources within their realm, let's say, accessible and available to the rest of the world. So they do believe there's a global coordination, a need for global coordination. And second, a global policy aspect to their work, which cannot interfere, as Elizabeth correctly says, with their... will you excuse me a second, please? Okay, sorry. There's this global policy entanglement, which they believe there is, even though, as Elizabeth correctly says, you all, CCTLDs, do have the constraints that you are constrained by local laws, government, courts, and so forth. But we have to work out a balance. Maybe we have to work out a gradual approach where we essentially find what's the first step that we can all take together and then go further. Second, we are hearing from people in Latin America and in Africa that they actually feel protected by the and this has proven, in fact, by the mere existence of ICANN. And it would not be enough to have a CCTLD association to achieve the same protective role, let's say. And it's not a protective role against the ogre of government, but against very specific wrongly directed actions from government which have been taken place, and where, again, the sole framework of ICANN has provided a CCTLD framework where they can work. If you had a trade association or a sort of labor union of CCTLDs, it would not be listened to by governments with the same force, because it would be seen as a reivindicative party seeking its own interests and not as this global body which ICANN can be built to become. Certainly, the approach doesn't have to be, in my view, I will be very personal about this, of a hugely restrictive contract between the CCTLDs and ICANN, but it essentially means be a part of the game, then, you know, win or lose together with the rules of the game. As it's, when you're taking part in the decisions, then you're taking part also in their consequences. And certainly by taking part of the decisions, you are mitigating whatever adverse consequences you can get from them. Which brings me to a very specific point. We are personally quite, I'm very gladly impressed that everybody believes that the CCTLD community is an enormously important one, that stay in dialogue. And the best example for me of this positive attitude comes from the named council itself, which has tolerated the CCTLD presence as a constituency with votes and everything. I mean, all ensuing rights without saying, you know, pony up or shut up, without asking for payment of dues and so forth. And that gives us a hint that we have to keep in negotiations and consultation more than negotiations with the CCTLD. It's a very political issue, which we have to be very careful about, but in which at some point we need some closure also and say, okay, these are at least the minimum responsibilities with which we come together with ICANN and work from them on. And the people or the CCTLD administrators that can really tell us how to do this are going to be leading the game.
Philip,
yes.
Can you allow one more comment from my side to this discussion?
Of course, Hans.
Which is that I have read with great interest the contribution by Oscar Robles, which he posted or was posted on the ICANN Reform Forum on Monday the 10th of June. I think for me in this discussion, his observations on CCTLDs are very valuable.
Okay, that's good to hear, and perhaps other council members who haven't seen that could look at that also. It may help us in our further thoughts. Elizabeth, very quickly, we need to call
yes, very in quickly. Very quickly to Alexandro, because just to items, every CCTLD association, including Center, and I would even say Center People First, agree that they have responsibility to the global internet community, and we do not and we never refuse to assume this responsibility. With regard to policy matters as devised within ICANN and by ICANN, the fundamental difference between CCTLD and GTLD is that the ICANN mission, the first ICANN mission, was to set up a place to devise extrajudiciary rules for GTLD space, to be able to add new GTLDs and to know how to rule for these GTLDs, which are extrajudiciary. CCTLD are not extrajudiciary. So this is the main difference. CCTLD may provide expertise, but and we fully agree that there is very subtle difference, and CCTLD cannot abide by all rules as devised by ICANN, but they may provide expertise. Thank you very much.
Elizabeth, let me look at this in a slightly different way. Make it let's say we try to find a non-confrontational approach, and we said, okay, what's the ICANN that we can build with the CCTLDs?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That is excellent question, and I am
and
looking forward
from the
Alexandro to discuss it.
Great.
I think that has to be the way forward. I'm going to bring this part of the meeting to a close now. Council, please stay on the line for a few more moments. We have a little bit of business to conduct. Alex,
Hans and Lima, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a very, very useful hour, and we look forward to continuing these discussions with you in Bucharest.
Well,
thank you
to all of you, and see you there.
Thank you, Richard.
See you in Bucharest. Bye-bye. So just to finish off, one bit of business I didn't do at the beginning of the call was adoption of the minutes of the last call, which had duly been posted. Could I have a proposer for those, please? A proposer to adopt the minutes of the last call, please.
Aye. Ellen.
Ellen, thank you very much. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any more voices for aye? Thank you very much. Those against, please say no. Those abstaining, please abstain.
I have to abstain. I wasn't on the call.
Okay, that's noted. And otherwise, those are adopted. Thank you. So, in terms of our next business and next meeting, will be indeed in Bucharest, where amongst other subject matters concerning evolution reform, we're going to be looking at some of the work from at least, I think, two of our task forces. So we've got a fairly packed agenda for those 3 hours in Bucharest. I will do a final version of our reply to the committee based on today's call, which the points of which is the draft, I think, was effectively agreed to, but those changes I will make, and then we can formally adopt that paper at the beginning of our meeting in Bucharest. And any clarifications or additional comments, I've worked by email as usual in between the meetings.
So I just want to remind again about putting the issue of the non-commercial show cause and the I guess also the PLD votes, those I would think also.
Okay, indeed, we can put them on either Bucharest or maybe the call after. We'll see how time goes on that. Situation in terms of the non-commercial votes, I think, is that I am waiting as chairman to hear the results of the Budget Committee recommendation on that. And once that gets to me, we will then pass that for discussion at the Council. But in the meantime, there is no change in the voting status of the non-commercials. Is there any other business?
Philip, I have a question for you.
Marilyn.
Are we not submitting this report to the Evolution and Reform Committee before Bucharest?
Yes, we'll submit what we've adopted today.
Okay.
What I'll do for Bucharest is just do a slightly modified version of on your wording there, otherwise we'll indeed be out of time. Any other questions? Any other business? If not, I thank you all very much for your participation and look forward to seeing most of you in Bucharest. Thank you.
Thank you.